It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined by Scotty Bordelon, 6 feet apart. And we are a little stoked the basketball season is underway. Two games under our belt, Scotty. And it's really hard to believe that when you look at the schedule, the Razorbacks only have 6 games left before conference play. Now, that's mainly due to the fact of COVID and the season being delayed a little bit. And if you're a basketball fan right now, you're watching the Maui Gym Classic in North Carolina.
Right. Yeah, I've really got it on, and Texas is pounding Indiana. They're really missing Justin Smith.
Just saying. MVP of my preseason MVP pick. Just saying. But yeah, no, the Razorbacks, 2 big wins, and by big, I mean the first one was gigantic, 146-62.
I don't even know if we can count that game, really. And that's what Eric Musselman said the other day. I think it was on Monday when he got asked, you know, what are your takeaways from the first 2 games? And he's like, I think you can just kind of throw the first game out. And that's what you do after an 80-point game. And like I wrote about Jalen Tate on Monday, and I've got the Hooplins subscription. I was going to see like his Arkansas's defensive numbers when Jalen was on the floor, and I had both games included. But I just decided to go ahead and throw Mississippi Valley State out the window.
It's just not – when you beat a team by 80, you score 142 points. It's just not great in the sense of learning stuff about your team. Now, it is good because this entire team got out there. They got shots up. They got to feel like what it's like to play at Bud Walton Arena in front of 4,000 people, not 20,000. They got to feel like what it's like to go through a game day and actually have officials out there calling fouls on you. You got all of that out of the way.
But that was about it.
But yeah, and hopefully maybe a few jitters. But listen, no offense to Mississippi Valley State, but they're Mississippi Valley State.
That game was like a dress rehearsal with a pickup game thrown in at the end of the day.
Yeah, Musselman mentioned that they don't get exhibition games this year, and you don't, but that was basically what that was. It just counts in the win-loss column.
For sure.
But you went into that. I mean, we told you on the podcast last week that Mississippi Valley State had the worst KenPom rating out of any Division I team, so they were not expected to be very good. And, well, they lived up, lived down to expectation, whichever one you want to.
They certainly met that standard that we told you about.
But Arkansas did learn a little bit about themselves, I believe, in that second game, a 69-54 win over North Texas last weekend. And it's a game that finally you got to see, I think, a little bit more competitiveness and how Arkansas can respond to a team that's going to try and instill their certain game plan against them. And I think Arkansas did what they were expected to do. They hung in there. They, you know, came out really firing, shooting. I think they went up 7-0 or something like that. Now I'm trying to remember. It was early in the game. But they went up quick, kind of lulled there for a little bit, but really over the course of 40 minutes took control of the game. And I think that's what you wanted to see from Arkansas against North Texas. Scotty, we mentioned just all of that. What was some of the things that you took away from? Really, as we mentioned, not a lot of takeaways from MVSU, so we'll just skip ahead to North Texas.
Yeah, as Connor Vanover's, I think it was a couple days before the season opener, asked Eric Musselman about Connor Vanover and what Vanover had been able to give Arkansas in practices, considering that, you know, Connor talked about it, I think it was in late, maybe it was in October, and he had talked about how he gained a bunch of weight during the offseason, and you wrote about that, like protein shakes on the daily, and then he was, you know, hitting the weight room pretty good. He had added some pretty valuable weight. He was almost up to 250 pounds, and, you know, his goal weight coming into the season was 245, but he got sick and missed close to 3 weeks And so Eric Musselman said that he's been practicing fine, but he's probably had some catching up to do. But I think if what we saw last week was Connor Vanover playing catch up, then Arkansas is going to be pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, North Texas was so hard-headed and just kept going at him and kept going at him and kept going at him. And he just kept turning him away. And if he didn't block the shot, he altered a shot. And if he didn't alter a shot, he was making guys think twice, sometimes three times, about even entering the lane or even thinking about throwing a shot up. I should have tracked the number of times that a guy caught the ball in or around the restricted area and had a shot blocked or didn't even put one up just because of Vanover's presence. I mean, he was the first guy to go for 16 rebounds and 6 blocks in a game since Anthony Davis in 2012. I mean, what you saw against North Texas was phenomenal.
It's pretty good company.
Pretty rare. Yeah, terrific company. I think Anthony Davis is making a lot of money now.
And just won an NBA championship.
Yeah, so no big deal. Yeah, Connor was definitely the takeaway. Like, his perimeter shooting really stood out in the first game. But second game, sometimes you, like Eric Musselman said, you got to win in different ways. And Connor helped Arkansas win with his perimeter shooting in game one. And then he was a force, dominant against North Texas. And that was the number one takeaway for me. That was the top note in my takeaways column on Monday.
I agree. Vanover is that cheat code in a way that Eric Musselman has. Eric Musselman had the bare bones minimum in his first year at the University of Arkansas and did a lot with the bare bones minimum. He had two guys that are now on NBA teams. He made Adriel Bailey a formidable three-point shooter and inside man Jimmy Witt guarding the five a lot of times. Now, instead of like having five shots in his quote-unquote gun, Eric Musselman can go to the bench, and he's got 12 different options. And Vanover, I think, is one of the most elite options that he has, whether or not he does continue to start or come off the bench. And I think that all depends on what the other team wants to do. North Texas wasn't going to push the pace. They were a slow-down tempo team, and so you can keep Connor Vanover in the game longer. Vanover is not the most fleet of foot. You've seen two games now of Vanover in a Razorback uniform. He's not going to be able to run up and down the court extremely well, but hey, hats off to that kid because he was getting up and down the court pretty well.
Yeah, that was one thing that really impressed me was just the way that he moved. And, you know, we hadn't seen him outside of the red-white game before last season. But I was impressed with the way that he was able to move his feet, and I thought he defended the pick and roll pretty well. And no, he actually, in the North Texas game, moved his feet so well that he forced a North Texas guard to travel and turn the ball over.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I was definitely not expecting.
Which, yeah, so first of all, want to say hats off to him for that. But also, he isn't going to be a guard running up and down the court because he's 7'3". So I think that what Eric Musselman has in Connor Vanover is an opportunity is if you are playing a team like North Texas that likes to slow it down. You know, this isn't in the same conference as Arkansas, but Texas Tech does that with Chris Beard as well. Connor can get more minutes and be valuable inside guarding the rim. If you're playing a team maybe like Auburn that likes to run up and down the court a little bit, he may not start that game, but he is that weapon that you can use for maybe 15 minutes of the game that he can come off and he can extend that Auburn defense if he has to where he's such a threat on offense that maybe if he doesn't get back in time on defense or whatever, you can still utilize him. I'm not saying that would happen because right now all signs are pointing to that he's been able to keep up with everything that's been happening, but he is a versatile weapon. I don't like to cross sports a little bit, but for a cross sport comparison, he's not like your every down back, but he's a guy that you put in the backfield when you want an explosive play. Connor Vanover is the explosiveness.
Kind of a change of pace forward.
On this team, I think.
Yeah, I think when Arkansas gets into those games, and we might see it with UT Arlington because they're going to want to get up and down too, but I think if in those games, Connor is probably going to be able to give you 15 to 20 minutes. And with both teams, you know, Arkansas is going to run whether he's on the floor or not. Mm-hmm. But when Connor is on the floor and Arkansas is running, I think that's when you're going to see him get plenty of opportunities on the perimeter as the trail big, and that's where he can really bury you.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that that is where he thrives in that trailing offense. If you are going to push it up the court and then all of a sudden you can't even close out on him and not be able to put a hand in his face. So that is unique. But that was one of my big takeaways, is the fact that Vanover is a weapon for this team, and it really a change of pace weapon.
Check this out. So Arkansas's first two games, Mississippi Valley State, North Texas scored at a 0.68 point per possession clip in Vanover's 107 defensive possessions. They shot 33.9% inside the arc and 22.9% from three. So he's affecting everything, literally everything.
Yeah.
And then on offense, they scored at 1.19 points per possession, shot 42% from three. So, I mean he's just opening everything up.
You can just go by his normal numbers, the fact of that he's averaging 14.5 points a game. He's only missed four shots on the year. He's 11 of 15, 4-6 from three. And he has 24 rebounds. He is a game changer, and it really makes you think that if he would have been on that Arkansas team last year, that I think that they weren't going to be a fringe NCAA tournament team, but would have been, you know, not probably a top six seed or anything, but they probably would have been right around that 8-9 seed, because he would make it the difference. He would have made the difference.
Agreed. I think we're seeing his development here paying off too.
Yeah.
Because one of the more impressive things, you know, he blocked six shots, and I think he had three blocks in the first game, maybe. I know he had more than one, but I think he's only been whistled for two fouls. And so the guy is, I mean, he's contesting shots. And I know it's like, you're not going to get called for a lot of fouls when you're blocking shots literally like
not even 11
feet in the air and you're not jumping. But his discipline defensively in blocking shots has been really impressive, and his hands are so good. Like he's kind of tipping balls to himself a lot of times, and a lot of times it's with traffic and guys who are jumping at him and jumping at the ball. But I remember one time there was a North Texas defender who tried to go low when Connor was trying to go low to grab the ball. And he just kind of quickly just went from his right hand to his left hand, and the North Texas defender just kind of fell on his face going after the ball. I was really impressed with his hands. Yeah. I don't think he grabs 16 rebounds against North Texas, you know, if he's got average hands.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Connor Vanover, definitely a key. Something else that I want to point out about this team is that they have so much talent, and it is all there. They just haven't put it together yet. And some people may have expected them to, and some of them may not have expected it yet. We are only two games into the season, Scotty. It's kind of that weird thing to where your timeline in the year doesn't match up with your timeline normally for the sport. Normally by this time, you know, we're getting close to where Mason Jones had his takeover game. The reason why I remember is because of the day I got married, which was December 14th, when he scored 40 against Tulsa. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, maybe there's an elite scorer on this team, and his name isn't Isaiah Joe.
Happy almost anniversary.
Yeah, thanks, man. But whenever that comes for Arkansas, December 14th, or, you know, around mid-December comes this year, it's not going to be the same. Arkansas only has 8 non-conference games before SEC play starts. They have 9 total.
Yeah, after Saturday, they'll almost be halfway through their non-con.
So,
I mean, they'll be halfway to conference season.
I think that this team, while there needs, in the next 6 games, there needs to be some things that are worked out to kind of get some chemistry. I think that this team is going to continue to build chemistry maybe all the way through the beginning of February. You might see until finally it takes that long before they gel, because you think this team has so many mature guys that know what they should be doing. And they do. You know, they have so many transfers, JD Notte, Connor Vanover, Smith, Vance Jackson, Jalen Tate, like there are older guys on this team, but they haven't all played together, and that matters.
Yeah.
That matters when you're trying to figure out who you're going to pick up in the fast break. That matters if you know that that guy's going to backdoor cut or if he's coming to you. You can practice those things, and Musselman can tell them those things, but until you get on the court with them and hear their voice and figure out how they defend well and all those kind of things, I think that this team is just trying to figure those roles out. And I think that it's coming. But I don't be surprised if they maybe drop a few games early in SEC play. And I think that's for two reasons. The fact that the chemistry hasn't been worked out real great yet, and the fact that, you know, they're not just going to be challenged just a ton in this non-conference schedule. There's some good mid-major teams, but Arkansas went out and scheduled teams. You know, they have Oklahoma State later in the year. They went out and scheduled Oklahoma. They were trying to play tough teams, but then COVID-19 gets in the way. Your only true road game is going to Tulsa, so... I think that those two things might lead off to a slow start for Arkansas, but I would not push the panic button by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, gosh, no, I'm not at whatsoever. I think this next three games against UT Arlington and then Lipscomb, and then you hit the road for the first time against Tulsa, and I think I might be going to that one. Still working that out, but I think that would be a pretty good game to check out live. Yeah, I think Arkansas, like the chemistry, like you said, I think it's okay. I think it's okay right now. I don't think there's like any issues with guys being unhappy that this person's shooting the ball too much. This guy's not sharing the ball as much as he should. This guy's not giving great energy, that kind of thing. Like, but the chemistry in itself with so many new pieces, like I think it's going to be a work in progress like throughout the season. But I'm not overly concerned right now. Like two games is super small sample size, and you basically just throw one of them out. I think right now you're still figuring out a little bit of like your go-to lineup. Like if you are in a close game on Wednesday, who are the guys that you're going with?
Yeah.
And who are the guys that you're thinking about, but might be on the outskirts of being able to get on the floor. That kind of thing. Like I said, you throw the first game out and you've played one like real game. I think you're still figuring out roles and you're still figuring stuff out. Like we saw Vance Jackson have a really good first game, but just things that you can't really control, like him being a little bit under the weather the day before the North Texas game, that kind of makes him a non-factor in the next game. But Vance could come out on Wednesday and be terrific again. So, not too concerned about the chemistry. One of the things that I took away from the first two games is Arkansas assisted on 36 of its scores, mm-hmm. and there were 27 different assist to score combinations. So these guys like to share the ball, and I think you'll see the camaraderie and the team chemistry continue to grow.
I've been covering the women's basketball team a lot this year, Scotty, and this is similar. This is not necessarily. We haven't heard Musselman come out and say this, but Neighbors was talking about his team, which, first of all, ranked in the top 25. They have expectations for the team, and they have good players. They have Chelsea Dungy, who's been there now. This is her third season,
yeah.
So she's been there. She's been at Oklahoma. She's been an all-SEC performer. You have Amber Ramirez. Both of those girls, by the way, played for Team USA. And then you have Destiny Slocum, who's the top grad transfer, came from Oregon State, has been at Maryland, been to two Sweet 16s. There's all these girls on this team now that are older and have experience and have talent, but they're trying to figure out how to play with each other. Neighbors was talking about in his fun and gun offense, basically, is what it is they're going to run up and down the court, shoot a lot of threes, and mm-hmm. make a lot of them. He said Chelsea Dungy passed up an open three because she missed the previous one. That's not what you want, because Chelsea, from her perspective, is thinking, I've got Destiny Slocum and Andrew Ramirez. Maybe I need to pass on this to let one of them shoot. But Neighbors pulled her aside afterwards and was like, listen, I don't care if you've missed the previous four, six, whatever it is. You're out there because you can make those shots. And the next game was against Florida Gulf Coast, and it ended up she was open again, shot the shot, and it was the game-winning shot, the go-ahead shot, which mm-hmm. then they ended up winning by eight. But I think there's a little bit of that with this men's basketball team as well, Scotty. There's a little bit of, okay, we're still trying to feel each other out. Maybe I pass up on this open three because maybe I think Connor can get a layup later, Vanover can, or JD Notte is a really good three-point shooter. Maybe if I'm Vance Jackson, I give it up to him. They'll find those things. It's just, and it's almost like we're talking about this before it happens, because I really haven't seen it happen just a whole lot, but that's just a little bit. I'm talking about the chemistry of these people of these guys are trying to gain while they're out there on the court.
Definitely still learning one another's tendencies. Like they just haven't played together very long. Like they played the red white game and then another red white game.
Yeah.
And then you actually play a real game and you're working out some kinks because you weren't challenged in either one of the first two times you went out. I want Vance Jackson to keep shooting. I was not discouraged by Vance missing his 2 3-point attempts the other night, because those were in rhythm shots for him and shots that we saw in the opener that he can make. And we've seen it, like, he's got a great body of work in his previous two stops, his previous 3 years in college. He can hit those shots. He's continued to shoot. I want JD Notte to continue to take quality shots on the perimeter and then, you know, use all those pro moves and those pro skills that he's got with the ball in his hands to get into the paint and score. We saw him do that and hit a floater in the lane. He kind of learned from driving into the lane, and I think he got called for a player control foul the next time he goes in the lane, jump stop, floater in the lane, hit that, and then he can also, you know, penetrate and then lob it up to Connor Vanover almost anytime he wants. He's really good getting in the paint, but those guys they got to stick to what they do well, and, I think if as long as Arkansas keeps winning, I don't think there'll be any problems, and we'll see this team start to really gel pretty soon. I think.
And I think so too. They have the potential to be a top four team in the SEC. I like to think of it as, you know, you've got your teams that play on the first day of the SEC tournament, your teams that play on the second day of the tournament, and your teams that play on the third day of the tournament. You want to be a team that plays on the third day of the tournament, and I think that Arkansas, in all honesty, they have that ability to be a team that plays on the third day of the tournament, but they also have the ability, if things don't click right, to be 6th, 7th, 8th in the conference. So I think that there's some flexibility there. Something that's just been interesting is, okay, I always said, throw the first game out the window because it was a scrimmage. But against North Texas, with Vanover playing so many minutes, he was eating up other minutes for freshmen.
That's all right. Were you going to take him off the floor?
But no, exactly.
No, you can't.
So, like, if Musselman, especially in the pace of play, it all depends on game flow, and Musselman is so smart about this. If North Texas is not running up and down the court, I'm not going to take anybody out because they're not going to get tired. And if I have the five best that are playing right now, I'm not going to take those guys out. Yeah. Musselman is so smart about, all right, I'm going to keep these guys in. He's not just going to rotate somebody in because it's been 5 minutes in the game and he thinks they might be tired. So, you know, that is maybe one downside of the fact that the freshmen haven't gotten to play, but you've seen the gelling of the older guys that have been brought in. And I think that there will be opportunities for those other guys, for KK Robinson, for Jalen Williams, guys like that, to come into the game. Moses Moody's going to get his. I'm sorry. Yeah. Moses Moody's a starter for a reason.
He's not going anywhere.
He's going to be there. But he's going to get
so much better, especially once he finishes a little bit better around the rim and he's not pulling contested threes with like his defender on his hip. I mean, he gets rid of those types of contested perimeter shots and he finishes at the rim. I mean, he averaged 13.5 points in his first two games and I thought he was a little bit inefficient. I mean, the kid's gonna be really good. To your point about like when Connor came out of the game, you know, a lot of people were a little bit upset that maybe you didn't see Jalen Williams in the game, but Vance Jackson came in. So you take out it. It's not mandated that if you take a big out of the game that you have to put another big in.
Right.
And especially Musselman
played five last year.
Exactly.
Five guards.
Yeah, he's definitely going to do that again at some point this year. But you take Vanover out, put Vance Jackson in. Vance Jackson can fill it up. It's just that he didn't hit his two shots. But were you upset with Vance's two shots? I wasn't at all. So, you know, you're just trying to get some offense in the game. At Arkansas, that was a game where, you know, you knew going into that game that your offense was not going to come as easy as it did against Mississippi Valley State. So you get it put – I mean, you take Vanover out and you put in a guy off the bench who can fill it up. It's just that those two particular shots didn't fall. If he had felt like himself the day before and been full strength against North Texas, he would have played more, and mm-hmm. he probably would have knocked down some shots and lifted Arkansas's offense a little bit.
You know what I'm the saddest about, Scotty, is we didn't get Vegas Vance, first of all.
Yeah, disappointing.
Because we didn't get to go to Vegas and watch Vance Jackson go. But looking at the schedule, we won't even get to see Stark Vegas Vance. No. Mississippi State comes to Bud Walton Arena, and Arkansas does not travel to Starkville. I was hoping that...
I didn't even consider that.
But we could have had Stark Vegas Vance.
Yeah, that would have been fun. What did you think about the league, like the SEC, the opening week? Like, it was kind of a... kind of rough going for some teams,
especially Kentucky, Richmond.
I think Richmond is for real. They've got some really fun guards, and that the KO kid, he about knocked Kentucky out with that exclamation point dunk toward the end of the game. Richmond's a really fun team, and like Kentucky's got a lot to figure out, but they do every year with so many new faces.
I think
so many new young guys.
This is a lot of people were talking about. This is one of the best classes that Calipari has brought in, which, I mean, he brings in fantastic classes every year, but one of the best since around the Anthony Davis era. And so I think that for me, without being plugged into the Kentucky hoops, I was just assuming that this would be a team that would come close to running the table in non-conference play. I know that they have some tough games, though, as well.
Yeah, they literally play Kansas tonight.
Yeah, so good luck with that. But, like, they have some tougher games, but also they are that talented. But I saw, I think it was Aaron Torres on Twitter said, every year we think about all of these incoming freshmen, and they are good, but every year we also undervalue the returners. In teams that have had people that have played together for years
Richmond
and years and years, which
like
is
four starters from which, a team that won like 24 games last year.
Yeah, so that's Richmond. And I think especially early in the season, if Richmond and Kentucky play in February, there might be a different story. And then I also just can't stand Calipari and the fact that he does make it all about himself, which there was a TV announcer who was calling a different game that ripped Calipari for making it all about himself. And I can't remember who it is now.
I hate that I missed that.
Dang. I'll send it to you if I find it. Yeah, it was in another game, and Calipari was mentioning the fact that he made his schedule. He's like, maybe I should have made the schedule so tough or something. And I can't remember who it was. It was a guy on ESPN, but he basically told Calipari to stop making it about himself. And I was like, thank you. Also, I mean, just your yearly reminder or whatever, Bill Walton is not a good color commentator.
He's just all over the place, man. He's all over.
Listen, if you like it, I don't mean to offend you. I just cannot stand him because I come and tune in to watch the basketball game and learn more about the basketball game, not the rivers of Oregon.
Yeah, and he's asking Jason Benetti if he asked twice. Man. He asked twice in the first 8 minutes the other day if he had been to Austria. And then he asked him if he had ever been on a cattle drive because they were covering a Texas game. Like, he's just... he's wild, man.
It's tough to look at. But he is what he is. I'll get off my soapbox there. But, I mean, if you look around the other parts of the league, I mean, Auburn got waxed by Gonzaga. But yeah. Gonzaga is
no shame in that,
good.
Really. Yeah. But you can't come back and lose to UCF.
Right.
The way that they did. I mean, that's not a good look either. And then Alabama got smacked around by Stanford. I think there's some thought that Stanford might be a middle of the pack 12 team, but I think they're top 25 on KenPom now. So that's not a terrible loss, but you certainly would have liked to have been more competitive.
You've got three teams that have played three games. LSU sitting at 2-1, Auburn, Mississippi State at 1-2. You've got a lot of teams that have played two games with Kentucky, Alabama, and South Carolina sitting at 1-1. By the way, Frank Martin is bald. Did you see that?
That was a stunner.
And then Shaka Smart has hair.
Yeah, role reversal.
What? And then there's a few undefeated teams. There's five undefeated teams. Vanderbilt, which they played. I ended up watching their game. It was on SEC Network. And, I mean, it was close, and they were not playing somebody that was extremely great. They're playing another V school. because I remember thinking, well, how many times?
Valpo.
Yes. How many times did two V schools play each other? Texas A&M 1-0, Georgia 1-0, Missouri 1-0, and Arkansas is at 2-0. But then, like, there's this season is just so weird. There's three teams in the SEC that haven't played a game yet. Kentucky's played three. Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Florida have yet to play. And Tennessee's supposed to be the best team in the SEC.
Yeah.
Up there with
Kentucky. Supposed to be getting, like, their basketball activities going, I think. Maybe later in the week.
And of course it's with COVID, but it's because of COVID. But still, you have like this weird season where you have three teams. The microphone just fell on me. Oh my goodness. You have three teams that haven't even played yet. And Arkansas is gearing up to play game number three. And there's three teams that have already played three. So it is what it is. At least you're not my neighbors' team, which, by the way, I want to give them just a little bit of pub. They're about to go face the defending national champions on Sunday. If you can get a ticket, go get a ticket. 4,000 people can show up to their game. Go watch them. They are entertaining as heck. I've watched every game this year. Entertaining as heck. They have superb talent on that team. And they're going to go face, I said, the defending national champions, one of the top teams in women's college basketball. It's so early that you can't tell who's separating themselves. But they're ranked in the top five. So shout out to them. Go watch them if you need to. But I forgot what I was going to say after that.
Yeah, they're really good. Do you have any takeaways from watching them play down in Florida? No, Destiny Slocum was lights out in the opener.
The way that Destiny Slocum handles the ball is smooth.
Yeah.
It's silky. It feels like she has the ball on a string. Mm-hmm. She can do whatever she wants with it. She can go right and just pull it back left real quick. She can go behind her back, between her legs, double moves. The way that she handles the ball is some of the smoothest I've seen in men's or women's basketball. Slocum is a stud. Chelsea Dungy is doing her thing as normal. I think the Razorbacks, two things happened in that Maryland game. They were tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fourth game in 5 days, right?
Yeah, fourth game, 5 days. And they got pushed to the edge against a really good Florida Gulf Coast team, which
I think they picked to win their league this year.
And they had a girl go for 40.
Yeah.
30. I can't.
I think 38 sounds about right.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but she had a bunch of points, and Arkansas was having a hard time stopping her. So I think that that's something to look out for. They had a hard time rebounding in that game against Maryland, but also Maryland just didn't miss. And they were, we knew before the game, Maryland and Arkansas were going to run with each other. Arkansas likes to run, so Maryland's going to run too. And the fact of Maryland had just lost the game before to Missouri State. They're coming out focused. Arkansas was playing four games in 5 days and just couldn't keep up. And Maryland out-rebounded them, had 20 more second chance points or 20 more rebounds. Man, all my stats are running together. Too many games together. But they had 20 more of something, either second chance points or rebounds, which is neither one of them is great. And then they couldn't miss. They hit 16 three-pointers.
Wow. Also, I read that Marquisha Davis was playing pretty well toward the end of the tournament. I think that I love that girl to death. She was covered her at Springdale High. I watched her one time. She's playing Rogers Heritage, and it's Rogers Heritage guard thought she had an open court layup, and Marquisha just hawked her down and pinned her layup to the glass with her left hand.
Marquisha's long.
Yeah, she is.
That's what I noticed about her. Marquisha's long. Erin Barnum. She's gotten a little bit of PT as well, most of the time at the end of the games, but it's good to see her, a girl from Little Rock Central.
I wish Alana Eaton was playing. I hate that she tore her knee up. That girl, she can fill it up too.
Yeah, Erin Barnum, Riley Langerman, a bunch of players getting playing time, which they took care of business in their first game too against Oral Roberts. So there wasn't a whole lot there. But I think that the big thing for Arkansas is going to be they are not as big again down low. And so how they make up for that is by making three-pointers and playing high tempo up pace. And I think that what Florida Gulf Coast did, which they are not bigger than Arkansas, but what they did is they just gave up. They were one shot. That's all that they were going to take. Now it helps when you have a girl go for 38 because she's making a lot of her first shots, but Florida Gulf Coast literally shot one shot. And then everybody for 75% of the game was dropping back and not letting
Arkansas's transition chances.
Not letting Arkansas go into transition. So Arkansas had to run a lot of sets. I think that might be a game plan for some of the teams that Arkansas is more talented than in the SEC. They might try that as well. But if you don't make those first shots, and
you don't have a girl going for 40 or two going for 20, that could be tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something to watch out for. But yeah, go watch the women's basketball team. Or if you can't, they're on ESPN2 on Sunday. Watch the game, and you'll be thoroughly impressed with Mike Nabors and his squad. I guarantee it. All right, Scotty. Big games upcoming at UT Arlington and Lipscomb. What do you want to see from the Hogs in these two?
Just take care of the ball a little bit better. Like, Arkansas turned the ball over 16 times against North Texas, and a lot of them were just unforced. You know, Desi, I think, traveled a couple of times, maybe three times. And, you know, just there was a point in the game, I think, when, you know, Arkansas went up by, gosh, maybe I want to say it was, you know, double figures, you know, in the first half, early second half, and then they, you know, just kind of got away from what got them there. And, you know, just got a little bit sloppy. Shot selection, I think, needs to improve too. Arkansas's got to finish better at the rim. You know, I charted all of their shots and stuff, and I had them at 39 for 58. So that's 19 shots at the rim that you're just leaving there. And that's not counting layups that, say, a guy like JD Notte or Moses Moody or Justin Smith took and missed at the rim, but they were fouled on. I mean, some of those shots that they were fouled on right at the rim were very makeable, but those don't count toward those numbers. And so you're thinking, you know, you left 20 plus shots at the rim that you didn't make. I mean, that can be the difference in you winning by 80 and 100. Yeah. I'm kidding, but that could make like that second game. That could make that a 15-point game, turn it into 20 or 25. You know, I think and that's what Eric Musselman was really harping on that the other day. And I thought it was neat to hear him say that, just because I was kind of thinking it. Because I remember, not to harp on Moses Moody, but I think he went 2 for 5. He went 2 for 5 at the rim in game one, and then he missed his first two in the North Texas game. I'm just like, if he can finish these shots that he is, I mean, he can typically make with ease, then, I mean, his scoring nights are going to look even more impressive than they are. And on top of that, it's shot selection. I think he can do without the, like I said, the contested shots on the perimeter. And then, you know, I think guys can take a little bit more time. Like Justin Smith, I think, missed a few bunnies close to the rim. I think they just take their time and, you know, maybe draw some contact. I think Arkansas will be in pretty good shape against UT Arlington.
All right, here's my bold prediction. Well, first of all, one thing I want to see them improve on is free throw shooting. I know in the UNT games, that's really the only one that we're going off of here, they only shot 65% from the free throw line. And I think the big key is that Justin Smith only went 2 for 6. And then JD Notte went 2 for 4. I think if you can get that free throw percentage to hover around 80%, then you're living in the right around there. You know, you want to make 100 because they're called free throws, but let's be realistic. That's not going to happen. Moses Moody, 6 for 6 against UNT from the free throw line. I think he's going to step into that role of being the free throw shooter for this team. But my bold prediction for this next week is I think Moses Moody, in one of these next two games, is going to start making some of those shots. He's going to get a little more comfortable. And I think that he's going to lead the team in scoring one of these two nights, either against Lipscomb.
Very easily could. You know, if he just gets those, layups and those close in shots to fall, and he can continue to draw fouls at the rate that he has, his efficiency is just going to go through the roof.
He shot 2 for 9 from the field against UNT and still scored 11 points. As I said, he got 6 free throws, 1 three pointer, and 1 2. But if he can do that, which, by the way, 11 points was good for 4th on the team, it looks like. So if he can do that, going 2 of 9 from the field, imagine when he hits 60% of his shots. I think he's due for a good game.
He's a really good slashing guard, and I think he's pretty good at reading defenses once, you know, the ball handler, you know, draws attention. And I remember he got an and one against North Texas just because he cut from the corner, from the left corner to the left block when JD Notte drew about 3 defenders in the lane, and Notte found him for an and one. You know, I think Moses can get some, he gets some easy buckets that way. And like I said, if he becomes a little bit more, I guess, efficient around the rim, like he's, he's going to be in for some big scoring nights. And he, I like that he's utilizing the corner three. Like, he's 2 of 4 from the corners. And like we talked about it a lot last year, Arkansas was pretty poor corner 3-point shooting team,
which is weird.
I think he's the only, outside of Justin Smith, he's the only guy on the team that's knocked one down. Jalen Tate's 0-for-1 from the right corner. But I mean, that's for a really good perimeter shooter, utilizing the spot on the floor that's, you know, most efficient. He's going to knock a bunch of those down, I think.
Scotty, before we let you go, before we head on out of here at the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America, I got to ask, 4,000 fans in the stands, what's it like attending a game right now?
It's weird. I walked into the arena for the Mississippi Valley State game, and there's 20 minutes before tip off, and there's just like not really anybody there. And it was, to be honest, I tweeted this when I sent up the picture when I got to my seat. It was just kind of eerie. It's kind of eerie in there. But if you want to know, I'll just tell you this right now. If you want to know what it's like in the arena when it's the loudest, it's when Desi scores. It's when Connor does anything productive. And it's when Moses scores. I mean, the crowd just goes nuts. Crowd goes nuts. And the, when Connor knocked down his first three, that was probably the loudest it had been. It was probably the loudest it's been in the two games. And gosh, what else? It was interesting to see Eric Musselman. I think there was a little bit of a crowd reaction when Eric Musselman kicked over the chair in the first game after Mississippi Valley State hit it 6-3. And let's see, what else?
I'm just going to miss the fact of, like, Musselman is not going to be 100% Musselman, because when he was out there playing against, I think it was Rice in the very first game that he was a coach, that he's firing up the crowd. And, you know, he's out there at the 3-point line telling everybody to get up and get excited. And, like, that's, he's not going to do that because there's only 4,000 people in the stands. And I think you're missing just an element of why it was such an electric atmosphere last year. And I mean, it's not anybody's fault. It's just, it is what it is. And we're really glad that we're playing basketball, but there's just something about it. When I went to the red white game, which is just a red white game and just students were allowed, but even then you're just like, this is going to be, I mean, from a fan's perspective, just being, putting it bluntly, it's just not going to be as fun.
Yeah, it's not. It's just, it's good to be in there though.
Yes.
And watching them playing games. Now, I was trying to think of the other thing when the crowd went pretty crazy, when JD Notte got his first 3-pointer blocked from the top of the key against North Texas, and then he regained possession, jabbed to his right, and got just enough airspace to let that second one go, you knew it was going in. And I saw a bunch of people stand up, and then when it went through, I mean, everybody went nuts.
He was on the hog snout for that thing.
Yeah, yeah, he shut the thing from, I looked this up the other day, I can't remember where, like, you know, you standing on the state. Yeah,
is that Helena, West Helena?
He was pretty close. Let me go back to the state. I know he was, oh, he shot it from Forest City.
There it is.
Yeah, shot it from Forest City. From I remember I was going back and doing my shot charts, and I got my wife to help me out, and we agreed he shot it from Forest City.
That's, I like having the state in the middle of the court. It's kind of fun.
I can't wait to watch Vance Jackson shoot from Texarkana sooner or later. It's going to happen. He pulled the trigger on some pretty deep threes, I think, in the first couple of games, and had pretty good success with it. I'm expecting Vance to bounce back. You're not going to hold that kid down long. He's going to find his touch again pretty soon.
All right. Well, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell saying thank you so much for joining us here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. If you subscribe wherever you're listening right now, you'll also subscribe to the entire Whole Hog Podcast Network. So we put out podcast reaction for football. We put out podcast previewing football, which you'll get another one of those this week, previewing the Missouri game. This is where Whole Hog lives, on the quote-unquote audio, or the radio, I guess you could call it. So if you are interested in Arkansas Razorback sports, make sure to follow us. As we said, we have the Basketball Podcast in America. We have the Whole Hog Podcast that talks about football. And then there's when baseball season rolls around, we'll get into baseball as well. Matt Jones does a really good job of hosting that podcast. So we've got tons of podcast content and information. So if you like all of that, make sure to subscribe here wherever you are listening. Well, as I said, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell saying so long, and we will see you back here next week.